This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to another episode of Say Why to Drugs. And first of all, apologies for my croakiness in the intro and the outro. I have a very annoying cold, so I won't drone on. In this episode, Scroobius Pip and I are chatting about heroin. Here we go. Let's talk about heroin.
Yes.
So heroin's the street name for diamorphine, which is a semi-synthetic drug. So it's a chemical alteration of morphine, which is from the opium poppy. Mm-hmm. So what do you think the appeal is of heroin?
Or it's kind of known, again, it's not one that I've tried myself, but it's known as a almost an escapism drug, a kind of a lose yourself from reality. I think it's why it's associated so heavily with homelessness or people in extreme destitute situations of that kind of, they take it to, escape. From what I've, again, from the research I've heard and learned in recent years, is that's not its only area. And we see it so much in society as this, the dregs of society, whereas there are a lot of users who aren't the dregs of society and so on and so forth. Mm. But yeah, in general, that's my association of, you think of heroin as everything's got too much and you need an escape.
Yeah, so it's an opiate, it's like morphine, and we use morphine medically as a painkiller.
Yeah.
So I think it's that. And also, because it's often injected and smoked as well, it's a very quick onset drug, which means you get this kind of rush, this euphoria and relaxation.
Right.
And it's that kind of rush that can really be dangerous in terms of risk of addiction.
Right, yeah.
And then it's another drug that once you are addicted, people tend to use it for the most part to bring them out of withdrawal, and withdrawal symptoms from heroin are very unpleasant.
Yeah.
Now, it's worth pointing out that not everyone does get addicted to heroin, as you mentioned, but it's one that seems particularly harmful in terms of the addiction, just because it's associated, I think, with kind of, as you say, the sort of people in extreme difficulty anyway in their lives.
Yes, yeah.
So how is it used? There are a number of different ways that you can use it, but in the UK in particular, it's most commonly smoked, although actually it's not really smoked. You're actually inhaling the vapour rather than actually burning anything.
Right, okay.
And then injected. But to inject it, so the heroin is called brown heroin, that's usually found in the UK.
Yeah.
To inject it, you need to mix it with an acid to create the sort of salt form of it, heroin hydrochloride.
Yeah.
And that makes it injectable. It's also can be snorted, but this is less common here because I think brown heroin is quite difficult to snort.
Right.
And also it can be squirted up your bum, basically.
Okay.
That's another way of taking it.
Yeah.
In the short-term effects of it, as we mentioned, this kind of rush of euphoria, and particularly if it's being injected. If you're injecting it straight into a vein, you get the bigger rush. If you inject it into the muscle or under the skin, it's kind of a less extreme rush.
Sure.
And then it's a sedative, it's a painkiller, so it makes you feel peaceful and relaxed. But it can also cause vomiting and nausea, particularly if you're not experienced.
Right.
I think this is also the case with morphine. So people, when they're in hospital, if they're given morphine, it can quite often make them feel sick and nauseous as well.
I mean, that information there, physical addiction aside, you can see how that would be an addictive situation, because of the drugs that we've discussed, the ones that tend to have a faster uptake tend to be over very quickly. So the fact that it's an immediate impact and lasts for a longer time, you can understand how that would be something that would appeal and become an addictive trait rather than the physical addiction, which is obviously we'll discuss mm-hmm. more. But yeah, I can understand that we tend to have the ones that last for a longer time. Even an example of when we discuss coffee, it will take an hour to kick in and then will last for 2 or 3 hours. And same with when we discuss a lot of hallucinogenic stuff. It's, again, there'll be a long period for it to kick in and then it'll have an extended time. So it's kind of this super drug in that kind of way of it's a quick effect or quick uptake and long effect, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And pain numbing as well.
Yeah.
The being potentially a cause of vomiting and nausea is quite dangerous because it can mean you run the risk of choking on your vomit if you're sort of relaxed to the point of not really being able to move particularly much and then you throw up. That's really, really dangerous.
And again, it's interesting on when some of the other drugs that we've discussed that may cause a vomiting in particular, a lot of them are drugs that are ingested orally and the vomiting will be a purging of that and getting it out of you. So it will reduce the amount that's in you, whereas with heroin it's not. So you're having that, your body is trying to purge, but it's probably just emptying you more and therefore making it more, putting you in a weaker state as such.
Yeah, if you've ever seen Trainspotting, you'll know that heroin causes constipation.
Right, yes,
so
of course,
that scene lives with you after you've seen it.
Classic scene.
And yeah, particularly if you're injecting, it's easy to overdose on heroin.
Yeah.
Because you can't, what's called, titrate your dose. If you're smoking it, it's much easier to stop when you reach the point you want to reach. But if you just inject it straight in, then if you've taken too much, there's nothing
that you
can do. You've
taken too much. Yeah, it's not one that you kind of have, I'll have a little bit more or I'll have a little bit more. Because again, it's in and you're in that state, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'd say there's nothing you can do about it. If you've listened to the episode with Bristol Drugs Project, we talked about naloxone, and I might mention that again in a bit. So there's potentially something that other people can do about it, but there's not really a lot that you can do about it. And the symptoms of overdose are that you get sort of shallow breathing, or we might even stop breathing. Basically, the painkiller has a kind of almost sort of anaesthetic effect.
It's fascinating in that respect and scary in that respect, because the fact is it's a drug that in its nature is kind of numbing and debilitating. Mm-hmm. Therefore, if you've taken it once and it's not been as strong as you would have wanted, you're not going to take more at the time because you're numbed and debilitated. So the only reaction will be next time, I'll put more in. And therefore, again, it's that instant, you never know when you're going too far because you're having to preempt, oh, I think we'll put another half of the amount I already had, and then you don't know the
And again, the big problem is that you don't know what it's been cut with. You don't know how strong any particular batch that you get is. And you don't know what else is mixed in with it, because it might have a certain amount of heroin and one time it might be mixed with caffeine and another time it might be mixed with another depressant. So another kind of opiate, perhaps, in which case you're taking sort of twice as much of the depressant as you are, which can lead to real problems rather than if it's previously been mixed with a stimulant, which might counteract some of those effects.
Yeah, of course. And it's a fascinating one. And just to kind of get a quick cross-network plug-in, but it's something that's discussed a lot on the Stop and Search podcast, and when I had Neil Woods on Distraction Pieces, is their quest for the legalization of all drugs isn't saying all drugs are good and all drugs are great. It's for the regulation, and it's exactly what you've stated there. We sat here, and so far all we've discussed is how dangerous heroin is, yet I've done a podcast a few weeks back where we're saying it should be legalized. And for me, it's because of how dangerous it is.
Absolutely,
It's too dangerous to leave in the hands of drug dealers when you don't know what's mixed in with it and so on and so forth. If it was legalised, it's then in the hands of government-regulated tests and regulation that goes, that can remove some of the risk if you don't know what else is mixed in there, an antidepressant or whatever else.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly it. All drugs are harmful, and some are more harmful than others, and some of them are more harmful because of the lack of regulation, just adding yet more risk onto something that's already quite risky.
Yeah, sure.
Overdose is what we were talking about then.
Yes.
And shallow or stopping breathing, you also get very, very small pupils in your eyes. Your extremities and your lips might go blue or bluish. You might have fitting sort of seizures or shaking, and your pulse gets very, very weak.
Yeah.
And it can be fatal, well, partly because there's nothing you can really do about it once it's started to be happening. But as we mentioned in the podcast where I was talking to Bristol Drugs Project, there is another substance called naloxone, which if you can inject that into a person who is overdosing, it has no effect other than it blocks the uptake of heroin.
Right.
So it can bring someone out of overdose really quickly. They'll come out of overdose straight into withdrawal, which would be pretty unpleasant for them, but they won't be dead. So, I mean, that's a bonus.
I mean, it's just terrifying to think of this becoming an amateur mixture of negating the effects and having the effects. It's scary. I mean, that's hugely important. But again, it's petrifying to think of that. That's all right. So we've got this to inject if that goes wrong. And then it becomes this cocktail of different injections. But again, it's great if it's something that hasn't gotten any effects other than to reduce the uptake.
We'll get sort of onto treatment of heroin dependence at the end, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
But for the time being, if we think about some of the longer term effects of taking heroin, so physical dependence is a big one.
Yeah.
A lot of it is down to, a lot of the other longer term effects are down to things like the risks from injecting.
Right.
You run the risk of getting fungal, bacterial and viral infections from injecting, which is pretty horrible. The abscesses at the site of the injection, collapsed veins, hepatitis, and if you're sharing, well, things like hepatitis and HIV if you're sharing needles.
Yeah,
and the problem is once you've started injecting, because you get that immediate rush and that's the kind of addictive part of the experience, it's really hard to go back to less harmful methods of consuming heroin once you've started injecting.
Right,
Because it's a drug that you get a build-up of tolerance to, once you've started using it and once you're getting a build-up of tolerance, so once you're getting to use it regularly most days, then you need to take more and more to get the same effect that you want. And so it's not surprising that people move to the more immediate ways of getting a hit. And other longer-term health problems are things like the neglect to one's own health because of the addiction.
Yeah.
Once you become dependent on a substance, and because heroin's so addictive in this kind of way, it seems to be the drug that people do become so dependent on that they let other aspects, or can become so dependent on rather, they let other aspects of their health kind of slide, potentially end up living in less nice places, not able to eat as much food, or certainly as good quality food and that kind of thing. And so that's a lot of problems. And if you combine that with the risk of infection risk being raised and poorer nutrition means it's much, if you do get a slight illness, it's much easier for it to develop into something more serious. And then the withdrawal symptoms. So if you try and stop, these can be extremely unpleasant. So it's like a heavy flu. And like by a heavy flu, I don't just mean a heavy cold. I mean actual flu and quite serious flu. So things like fever and really unpleasant symptoms.
I mean, that was an interesting thing I heard on when Dr. Carl Hart was on Joe Rogan's podcast. And again, we always kind of like to recommend further reading and further listening. And Dr. Carl Hart is someone who's done a lot of research into this. He's very pro heroin as such, it seems. So again, it's not necessarily a middle line, but again, it was a fascinating podcast. And the thing that got me was exactly that, because you've clarified there that a heavy flu isn't just a bad cold, but equally, if you've got the flu and you know it's just the flu, it's unpleasant, it's horrible. I've had it. It's feverish. It's nasty. But you get over it. Whereas Dr. Carl Hart's argument was, because of the way we portray heroin withdrawal in films, in cinema, in TV, it almost makes it worse. Because if you imagine you had the flu and everything you've ever been told is the flu, it's going to kill you, you're going to die, then that makes it 10 times worse, if you know what I mean. Whereas if we could try and reduce the fear and myth around a heroin withdrawal, it, not that it would ever be a pleasant experience, I'm not making any illusion of that, but it wouldn't be quite that level of really feeling like the world's going to end and
there's nothing I can do to come off it, so I might as well stay on it.
Exactly. And the fact is, a heavy flu is horrible, but it doesn't make you go, oh, I'll never go out or be anywhere near a situation where I might get germs and have the heavy flu. Whereas again, the fear of the harshness of heroin withdrawal will make a lot of people go, I'll stay on it, I couldn't live through that, I couldn't go through that. So well, No, you could. It's not nice, but it's there's two sides of it. Expressing that a heavy flu is very bad is completely true, but equally it is still something that you can get through. And it's not as bad as maybe it's portrayed in films and in cinema and in the newspapers or on Jeremy Kyle or whatever else.
And I think this is another moment to do a little plug for the episode where I talked to Bristol Drugs Project.
Yeah.
Getting in touch with these kind of drugs projects, if you are in that situation and you want to come off but you're scared about it, like, there are people who can help you, there are places you can get support, because it is the kind of thing that, if you do have a heavy flu and you're in a bed sit with no heating, that's going to be pretty horrible. Yeah. But if you can go somewhere where someone can bring you chicken soup or whatever, then it's going to make it still going to be horrible, but it's going to be much more bearable.
Exactly that. And the beauty of things like the Bristol Drug Project is similar to these podcasts. They're unbiased. They're not there to be anti-drugs or anything else. They're there to deal with a problem in that moment. I think a lot of the fear of people are using recreational drugs is if you go to your regular GP or whatever else, there is a level of, well, it's your own fault. Do you know what I mean? Not there is, but there can be a level of, well, you've got yourself in this situation, a level of whatever else. Whereas there are a lot more groups like that that are going, no, look, forget all of that. You're here. I don't care how you got here. I don't care how this happened. I don't care whose fault it is. Let's help you and get a way out.
Yeah, absolutely. And I keep mentioning Bristol Drugs Project because I live in Bristol and that's who I was speaking to. But there are drugs projects all around the country.
Yeah.
And if you feel like you don't want to go and talk to your GP, then they can be a good starting point to getting help if you're looking for it.
And again, similar to the podcast, they're also very open and supportive of just education on these things and saying, look, here's what this drug is. You know, it's not you're going to go in there and they're going to say all drugs are bad.
Yeah.
We're going to get you off that. Like, they will. The point is to get you off stuff, but it's not there in a judgmental way. It's there in a, right, let's support and educate.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other withdrawal symptoms are things like heartburn, sleeplessness, depression, cramps, vomiting. And as we mentioned, constipation is a effect of heroin. So the opposite of that is obviously diarrhea. So it won't be a particularly fun time coming off heroin, but it's, once you're off, then all of these things will sort of stop. So,
do you know, what's the kind of, is there an average period of this? What's the kind of the coming off time?
As far as I'm aware, it's a few days, sort of three or 4 days for the physical symptoms to be over, but it might take a little bit longer to sort of start to actually feel better.
Yeah,
but the physical withdrawal, it's a few days.
Really similar to a bad a flu. Again, it's so comparable as it is. It's that kind of having a few days of absolute hell and then,
Okay, so let's get on to the myths then.
Yes.
Okay, one dose and you'll be hooked.
Yeah.
Now, it's not true.
Yeah.
And this is the case with all drugs, is that if you take it once, you can't become addicted at that point. You can really, really enjoy it and want to do it again, and that might be the start of your dependency, but it's not going to be one dose and you're addicted.
Yeah, yeah.
The addiction and the dependence won't happen straight away.
Yeah, yeah. And again, as we've discussed before, a lot of that is the difference between the physical dependence and addiction and personality traits or situation or atmosphere or whatever else is. As said, you could really enjoy it and therefore go, let's do more tomorrow, but that's not the same as addiction.
Yeah, and again, it's set and setting.
To lead to it,
like we talked about in the psychedelics podcast, they have a really big impact on sort of your likelihood to want to do it again, your first experience, and then your ongoing experiences.
Yeah.
100% pure heroin has no addictive qualities.
Right.
Yeah. Someone messaged me and said they were told that by their science teacher.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is it not true?
That's not true at all. All heroin users are addicts. So it sort of really depends on what you mean by addict and what you mean by addiction.
People, I was gonna say, we're moving on to the next myth now.
I thought that was a
statement. Okay, go on.
No, sorry.
So this is going against everything we've said so far.
That's the next myth.
Right.
I moved straight on from 100% pure heroin has no addictive qualities because that's nonsense. Myth number three, all heroin users are addicts.
Right.
And this sort of depends on what you mean by addiction. If you use it regularly, you will build up a tolerance, you will get dependent, and you will experience withdrawal if you stop. But that doesn't, maybe some people would say that's being addicted, but yeah. I don't know. I think to call someone an addict is quite a stigmatizing term, and it's not very helpful.
Yeah.
But you could use heroin once a month, religiously, I was going to say, which is the wrong word, but like without fail. And you wouldn't build up the tolerance because there's enough of a gap.
Yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily go into withdrawal if you stop because it's sort of not, you know, you're not building up this tolerance as much. But if you sort of felt like you really wanted to do it, you felt like you had a compulsion to do it every month, would that make you an addict? I don't know. But I don't think that it's fair to say that all heroin users are addicts.
Sure, yeah.
It's the drug that perpetuates the addiction and the circumstance has no effect.
Right.
This isn't true either. It's been sort of noticed by drugs workers and drug users that it's easier to overdose if you're taking the drug in a new location or a different location to usual or a different circumstance to usual.
Right.
So it seems like the body, or sort of probably more likely the brain, kind of responds to cues in the environment that go, we're about to get heroin, and sort of prepares itself somehow. And if the heroin, even if you're a regular user, it's more easy to overdose if you're in a completely different setting. And again, it's this set and setting that we talked about before. It's really sort of has an important role in how the body or how the mind experiences drugs when we take them.
Yeah.
Abstinence is the only cure for heroin addiction.
Right.
So this is another myth. Now, of course, the safest thing to do for yourself is not to take any drugs at all. If you find yourself taking heroin, you get tolerant to it, you feel dependent on it, then stopping is the best thing to do in terms of psychologically getting completely away from the substance and removing it from your life will be best for you. But taking it less regularly, leaving at least a few days between like taking it and taking the next dose, that will reduce your physical dependence, as we mentioned. So it is a way to sort of stop building up that tolerance and stop being dependent on the drug without necessarily completely stopping.
And again, it's again going back to set and setting and all this, because if you're in a situation where that's an option, then that's surprisingly logical. Just to cut, as with anything, to cut down, to gradually cut down is great. Whereas if you're gradually cutting down, it's going to be repeatedly putting you in a location or situation that's more likely to stop you cutting down as such, then then abstinence would be better, obviously. Yeah. If it's saying, I will never go near these people or this area or this situation, then sure. Whereas if you are in a situation where it could be a gradual cut down, then it's going to ease you off a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, I mean, we're focusing very much on sort of the drug itself, but we're about what we've done with all of these podcasts, but there's so much else that influences,
of course,
A, whether you decide to use drugs in the first place, and B, your experience of them and your likelihood to do them again and all this kind of thing. And it's, I mean, maybe even that's more important, but it's beyond the sort of scope of this podcast, really. Yeah. But I think it's just something to mention that it's really important to consider as well.
Yeah, sure.
Does heroin have any benefits? If we move on now from the myths.
Yep.
Well, morphine obviously has huge medical uses for treating both acute and chronic pain, from heart attacks to cancer. It's like the painkiller of choice for severe pain.
Yeah.
Even if it's like acute pain, so pain that is transient and passes quickly, or chronic pain, pain that you've had for years and isn't going anywhere. Yeah. Morphine is quite often prescribed in that situation.
Sure.
And that's very similar to heroin. It's only a very slight difference.
And again, with loads of these, it seems to be stuff that potentially at some point were used and were seen as an option. I know when my nan was younger, she had operations and became addicted to opium because that's what they gave her at the time. And it was a lack of awareness of the physical addiction and all that. But it was like, well, this is what you need. Here, have as much as you want. Without that awareness, that it's like, all right, you're causing an addiction there.
Yeah, exactly. And that's when we talk about regulation. That's what you see with people prescribing morphine. You have to do it very under an awful lot of checks and things to prevent dependence and to prevent people becoming sort of dependent or addicted.
Yeah.
So that's how regulation works, you know. And it doesn't work perfectly, but it's at least trying to sort of take these things into account.
Of course.
Okay, so before we wrap up, a few other things to discuss. So when do overdoses happen? Why can users overdose, or how does it happen?
Right.
And we've sort of touched on this a little bit already, I think. So street heroin can vary greatly in quality and vary with what it's cut with.
Yeah.
And we've also mentioned that tolerance sort of depends on the set and the setting as well.
Yeah.
But also, that your tolerance drops very quickly after a break. So if people have been hospitalised or incarcerated, then overdoses are much more likely straight after they get out of hospital or get out of prison.
Because they'll take their usual amount and that will be far too much for their body to handle.
Or even they might cut down but not know how much to cut down. Like you probably know that your tolerance will have dropped, but maybe you don't know how much. So it's much easier to misjudge when you're sort of coming to it clean or cleaner.
As you said, it's a scary one because of the injecting, because it's just, it's in and that's that now. There's no edging up, and it's like, no, that's in. And if that's the amount that's going to kill you, then it's in you now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no two ways about that.
And slightly related to that is the sort of mixing it with other drugs. So it's very dangerous to mix with alcohol or other sedatives, as we discussed. It's much more likely to tip you into sort of overdose. And depending on what it's cut with, it can have things like paracetamol in it, sugar, other sedatives. And so it's just very, very unpredictable.
Yeah.
And one thing might be cut with something and another batch might be cut with something completely different.
Yeah.
And
it's
very, not really any way of predicting that.
Sure.
And in terms of sort of harm reduction advice, obviously injecting is by far the most dangerous way to take a drug.
Yeah.
And not just from sharing needles, but sharing needles is really, really terrible idea.
Yeah.
And there are needle exchanges around the UK. And if you go to these needle exchanges, they can provide you with clean kit. So at least you're removing that level of harm from sharing needles. Also, I read this and it made me feel really, really squeamish, but lemon juice and vinegar are really dangerous to use as acids to make injectable heroin. So you might remember at the beginning I said that you need
to mix
brown heroin with an acid in order to make the injectable form. So lemon juice in particular has been linked to fungal infections, including infections inside the eyeball. I don't know how common that is, but it's just, and again, you can get acids at the needle exchange in order to use something safer than just trying to use lemon juice or vinegar.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, to answer your earlier question, if you are trying to get off heroin, the physical symptoms take about 4 days to stop, but recovery might take a bit longer. There are ways to be treated sort of medically if you have a dependence on heroin and you want to get help. So opioid substitution, so methadone, you've probably heard of, that people can go to a methadone clinic to get methadone to replace their heroin. But methadone on top of heroin can make it, again, more likely that you can overdose because it's very similar.
Right.
But there's another substance called buprenorphine, also known as Subutex, and this actually doesn't have an effect on top of heroin. So heroin's blocked. If you take this, it will have the effect, but then the heroin won't have another effect. But the problem is then if you're dependent on heroin, you might just stop taking the Subutex, and so you can have a hit from heroin once it's left your body.
Yeah.
People who are on sort of methadone can eventually have their methadone can have their methadone slowly withdrawn, and the withdrawal's less intense. The experience of coming off is less intense than if you come straight off from heroin.
Right.
But I was speaking to Professor Graham Henderson, who was a guest on the Bristol Drugs Project episode, and he was talking about how there's a big debate about how long someone should be maintained on methadone before trying withdrawal, and whether they should be withdrawn at all if they're taking methadone in a kind of regular way. You're not injecting it anymore. You're avoiding going into the settings where you were previously taking heroin. How important is withdrawal? And I'm not really sure there's an answer to that, but it's something to sort of think about. I think a lot of these podcasts, we talk about harm reduction and sort of how much reduction of harm is enough. And yeah, surely any reduction of harm is better than no reduction of harm.
Yeah, and it is an interesting one, because if you're living safely and healthily as such with a manageable methadone habit, that might be safer than coming off and then having that moment of wanting to return to heroin, or wanting, you know what I mean, of going all the way back. If you've got that comfortable plane, then yeah, there is an argument to say, well, let's leave it there. Let's maintain this. This seems under control. Yeah, rather than potentially push further and cause a complete spring back as such.
Yeah, I think this is something that sort of people are trying to work out what's the best
option. Yeah.
So yeah, cool.
Great.
Awesome.
And there we are. Thanks to Professor Graham Henderson for his help prepping this episode. Graham was one of my guests on the bonus episode with Bristol Drugs Project, so if you haven't listened to that one yet, do check it out. As always, if you're looking for help in getting off heroin, there are some links on Acast that may be useful. Please do get in touch on Facebook and Twitter if you've enjoyed these episodes, or if you've got anything to say about the podcast. And until the next episode, take care. Bye. You've been listening to Say Why to Drugs with me, Dr. Susie Gage. The music and editing were by Jim Murray. The artwork is by @MyNameIsAd. Say Why to Drugs would not have been possible without the generous support of I'm a Scientist, Get Me Out of Here, the Medical Research Council, and Scroobius Pip's Distraction Pieces Network.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.